Hello, this is TJ Schwartz. I'm here with Lucas Burnley. You are listening to the Edge and Flow podcast. Lucas and I have been sitting here for like 45 minutes chatting, and we thought we'd better hit record.
Hey, we needed to like prime the pump slash like let the pressure out of the pot
Yeah,
this morning.
that's fair.
It would I feel like just sitting down and recording would have been like a
Yeah.
bad idea.
Yeah. And I should quick tangent. This podcast is about knives, manufacturing, and all things sharp, I guess you could say.
And life, I guess that's
Yeah.
like long
I mean,
game.
life can be sharp.
Sharp life. Yeah, holy cow. We're like at the end of summer. Summer historically in our youthful minds is like a time of rest and relaxation and new experiences and adventure. And I think like this summer is not feeling so much like that.
Yeah.
Your year like isn't bookended yet quite by holidays because your kids are still small enough, but like ours is like, okay, cool, here's the kids are home. I'm like, wait, what?
So we were talking a little bit about the endless string of work-life balance.
Right, which doesn't ex I'm fully convinced that it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Not in a way that is like that like equilibrium is achievable. Right? Someone can call bullshit on that if they want, like if someone's found it. But where you and I were kind of like when we started recording, it's kind of this thought around like the noise and the movement at this point never ends. Because you are essentially transitioning from one like level of like cognitive load and work into another, and then just like rinsing and repeating. Right. So you use this as an example. You had a work week, which rolled into a drop, which rolled into a camping trip, right? You're also with the kids during the camping trip. So when you got home, were you feeling rest and restored from your camping trip?
I can't say I was.
Like, right? I just got back from a 7-day family vacation. I am not feeling restored. And that's not to say like this is like the real talk, right? I had a good time. I had fun. It's nice seeing my family. It's good to see the kids having fun. All I'm saying is that like my personal tanks are not full. Right?
No, that's fact. And it's, I don't know that it's talked about enough, but it's like kind of talking with complete honesty is what I like to do on this podcast. And it's
Same.
like how being honest with yourself about what fills your tanks, because it's easy to be like project virtue in that, like, oh, what fills my tank is something that sounds good to say. But it's
Right.
like, no, really think about it. Like, what actually do you need? And for
Right.
me, it's like something, it's like going back to it. I really like remote control stuff. I've always have. When I was a kid, I was just obsessed. And it's like scuba diving. I talked about that. Like, my mind keeps wandering into these topics that like have eluded me for decade of adulthood. And it's like, it seems so silly to think that like that is how I could fill my tank, but it's like I'm starting to come around to the fact that it's like it's okay to be a kid alone, enjoy yourself, you know what I mean?
Well, why? Okay, here's like a bigger question. So why does this matter? Okay. Are we not supposed to just like fully just like grin and bear it? Where it's like, nope, just like toughen up, get it done. There's like an element of that that exists. I think there's times where that's like necessary, but like if you're talking about this in relation to like maintaining, and not only maintaining, especially with the business, like maintaining, but like growing a business and like keeping the business feeling like special and fun, okay, to where it's not becoming drudgery. Maintaining and growing a relationship with like a partner or spouse, and maintaining and growing your relationship with like your kids, okay? And not, and like not letting any one of those things be the most basic level of that relationship or interaction. And then as like a stretch goal, maintaining relationships with friends, right? Because that is super important. And then also filling your own tanks and like maintaining yourself. And like, how is it possible to do all of those things over a long timeline? And again, I think the argument could be made that like a lot of people don't. And like generationally, I think a lot of like our parents' generation did not. Right? Like something big is getting dropped along the way. I think it's like okay to drop things. It's okay to change priorities. But like right now, I don't know. I've had this conversation with enough friends that are in like a similar age range. I would say like drive range, like personal drive, and then like socioeconomic slash like kid age range to feel that like it is actually something that is like very widespread.
Yes. And you could call it universal,
Yeah.
you know.
Right.
Yeah,
Universal
it's the
within
human
like a
condition.
pocket, right? Because it's a different, they're like culturally it could be different, like globally it could be different, but like right now, like for us, this is feeling like pretty relevant. I think that you were talking about FPV drones, right? And as you were explaining it to me, I think it makes perfect sense because I think it goes back to the namesake of the pod a little bit, right? Like, so for you, your interaction is like this idea of like the edge. As you reach the edge of something, I think you're seeking another like frontier essentially, right? Because it's not like you're like, oh, I want to get to the edge and then I'm gonna build a sweet little cabin and I'm good there, right? Like I'm just gonna like chill. I don't think that's actually the mindset. So you look at something like FPV and you're explaining it to me, and I will let you explain it, but the idea, the intersection of learning, novelty, and like inherent difficulty, right? So I want you to explain the process of like where your head is at with getting into FPV drones, because it's not go to Best Buy, buy an FPV, go to a field, fly the drone.
So we talked a few weeks ago about scuba diving because that has the same feel to me of like
Totally.
high degree of learning, large learning curve, involves a lot of researching gear, techniques. And I kind of put it on myself. I'm like, I'm going to do that this summer. I'm going to get certified. Didn't happen. So I think that's kind of where I'm like landing of like, why didn't it happen? And I'm like evaluating with a more strategic way of like, I live in Idaho. I don't know how I'm going to be able to be a scuba diver realistically. You know what I mean? Like I still have that for like maybe that's a like empty nester type position where I could do that.
Totally. Yeah,
You know what I mean?
that's a time rich. I mean, unless you just fully want to like freak out some farmers and like pop out of their cow tank. Like probably gonna get shot though. So
It's that just is, it's travel required. It just is. And I
right. And the
wanted it.
gear's not fun to play with if you're not doing like the real
Yeah.
activity.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
You can put it on and like sit on your couch and stuff. But like, yeah. But I think I like kind of set myself on that and was doing the research. And I think I just kind of like sputtered because I was like, this isn't going to happen. Like, there's
Yeah.
nowhere to go. You know what I mean? And so, I didn't replace it. And I was like, kind of starting to feel like a little bit dejected because I'm like, feel like, oh, I built a life that I can't do the things I want to do. You know what I mean? But I was honest with myself of like, that's not a very good choice for right now. Like that, you know, scuba diving. So I was like, I literally just open blank page. I was like, what's a hobby? High degree of learning curve, difficult. And I have remote control airplanes and helicopters from like Walmart. Every year for Christmas, my wife gets me one because I'll play with them for like, I just love it. Like, I love flying stuff and it's challenging. And I've always looked at like DJI drones and stuff because they're cool. But it occurred to me, I was like, well, there's the world of FPV drones, which are people building drones. And it's not like Legos. They're actually, you have to solder and there's a lot of adaptability with like the different parts. It's not very mature as an industry. It's very like
It's
bootleg.
like early days, like, hey, I'm gonna build a CNC. Like, you can find the information and you can find the parts, but it's not full, yeah, not fully developed.
And I was like, you know what? I want to be challenged to build one of those. And I started researching like how hard is it to fly? And basically everybody is like, it's insanely difficult. I mean, it's between 10 hours to even be able to get it off the ground of effort, of practice. And then maybe 20 to 50 hours, even 100 hours to get like to where you actually can fly that thing well. And they have simulators where you can buy the remote for like $70, plug it into your computer, and the simulator is like very close to reality from what I understand in terms of the physics. And so that everyone's like, get the remote, don't buy anything else, spend like at least 10 hours flying in a simulator and developing the muscle memory before you even build anything. 'Cause they're like, you'll build a $1,000 drone and you'll hate it on day one if you don't have something going for you. And so it's like, it feels to me like there's this roadmap of like a journey of like this, I'm gonna have to put 100 hours into this. And that like excites me to no end to, because the ability to just flip open my laptop, do it. And it's like, I don't have, you know what I mean? And then even if you have the drone, you can still practice simulated. So it's like the barrier of entry is extremely low. And then the ceiling is unlimited because those things can, I mean, there's YouTubers that have like 500,000 followers or subscribers that like talk about drones. I mean, it's a huge, huge deal. And so it's like, I'm going to sink my teeth into it because I've been feeling like I need challenge that doesn't have a real consequence. You know what I mean? And that
Time wise,
is, and that it doesn't involve other people. Like it's just me and this challenge. You know what I mean?
It's not super resource intensive. And there's like, it's gamified in the sense that like you don't get instant reward. You go like you're gonna learn, you're gonna do the training. And at the end of the training, you're gonna build a thing. And then when the thing is built, you basically are getting like the dopamine hit of like a new toy slash like technology robot. That to me is like about as pure of a cycle for brains like ours as I can imagine, right? Because you get you're extending the amount of excitement, joy, and interest based on the fact that it can't all happen at once. That's kind of how I've been categorizing like my like related hobbies. So same thing for me. And I had sent you a picture recently. Like, I've always loved 22 rifles. It's like my favorite caliber. One of my first rifles was a 10-22. I love them. And like at some point over the last year, I was like, this is silly. Like, I should just always be building one. Right. And at this point, they are more akin to Legos, but it's still like a kind of a fun process of like sourcing parts, figuring out an application, like messing with things. I get the enjoyment of like ordering something and then it like 2 weeks later it shows up. And then I'm like, oh, I'm gonna like go assemble this. They're just these little like micro breaks. And this is at a time where like getting out shooting regularly is not regular at this point, but I still get it as like the thing, kind of the light at the end of the tunnel. Maddie and I are going out for a range day today, and then we're having like a business meeting and lunch. Great, right? I get to do that. I just built her a little Glock 19. It was super fun for me to like do all the assembly and like set it up. And now we get to go like mess with it. You and I were talking about these things in relation to kind of like burnout, decision fatigue, and kind of like just like a general overload. And what I think is so interesting is that right now, at least, the things that we're classing as like relaxation essentially still have like a degree of like difficulty, and like it's not relaxation from like a standpoint of rest. It's active work, right? For me, the surfing thing, like it's also that it's time. So like there's all these things that I would like to be doing, but I have river surfing like 5 minutes from my house. That's the thing that I can lean into. But around that, I get to try different surfboards, get to try different fins, get to try techniques, like, but it's in a time frame that is like acceptable. But it's also, you like look and you're like, yeah, but it's flow state. Right. So figuring out these things, I think, is like a pretty big key to longevity. But you actually have to do them.
No, and actually doing it is where I've been falling short, and I think I've come around to the point that in part of the reason for that is choosing the wrong place to try to release, because it's like I'm really into off-roading, huge time commitment, huge money commitment, difficult to get it done. Scuba diving, even worse. And it's like I've been unable to come up with like what's something I can like literally sit down and just do without a huge a commitment so big that it ends up not happening. So I know that FPV drones isn't what people are like tuning in to listen and talk about, but I think that what I'm getting at is like the selection process of sort of taming the fatigue of life, you know what I mean? And like what the hobby that you choose, the way you choose to relax, I'm trying to narrow in and be more strategic about that. And I think that's the foundation of what I'm saying.
I think, well, and I would argue that it's like incredibly related, right? And that's the thing. It's like you and I at this point, we have enough years. I mean, combined, we're what, like 30 plus, right? I think that like some of the coping mechanisms and strategies that we have, I think they're actually like pretty relevant. And this is the long game thing, right? Like, it's pretty easy to come out and be super excited about what you're doing and like successes that you're having. It gets harder over a long time horizon, right? And maybe this is not true for everyone, but again, I know enough people that it is true for that I think it's pretty important. And I also think that maybe like back to the balance concept, like maybe this is where like some type of balance is achieved, but it doesn't, it's not like, yeah, it's not like in stasis. It's like, it requires active management kind of, right? At least like my hobbies shift. I know that I get 3, 6 months. I mean, depending on like a hobby slash hyper focus. I also know that that is going to come back around probably in 3, 6 months or a year. So it doesn't make sense for me to like get the gear. I get rid of the gear. I like just put it in the safe, or I put it in the garage, or, you know, hang up like the skill set that I'm learning and come back to it. You know?
Yeah, and I don't know how universal that is, but I think you and I are similar in that way, in that we like shiny things.
Yeah.
And I think there's a cultural blanket of like, oh, don't do that, it's just a waste of time and money. But then at the same time, that leaves a hole. You know what I mean? It's like, no, you got to be okay with like doing the shiny thing. You know what I mean? And
I would
it,
argue that for us, and I say us like as an industry, also for like designers in any industry and like makers, maybe also, we're like, material culture is often portrayed in a negative light, but like when you think about what we're doing, like material culture is like a big part of our experience. Mm-hmm. For me, it creates interest. Like I like messing with related, but knife or not, like related levels of like quality, technology, machinery, et cetera. Like there's like, I look across the board, there's almost like a level of gear that I like. Doesn't have to be higher than that. Can't be lower than whatever quality I'm like deeming as mm-hmm. my level of quality. And I would say that it warrants like maintenance and like getting gear and trading out gear. I think it helps like my creative process and like helps me remember like some of the reason why I do what I do. Mm-hmm. Right. It's outside inspiration.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's pretty valid.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I really enjoy like it. I think here's where I ran like astray a little bit is like, I really enjoy working and I think I had deceived myself a little bit and that it like fills my cup in the right way.
Right.
It's easy to like tell yourself that because it's like, because it feels great and it's rewarding and I enjoy it.
Yeah.
I kind of tell myself like that like my hobby is my work. You know what I mean? But I think right. that there's something is amiss there, that it's like work has time constraints and yep. consequences and yep. that makes it fun for me.
Yeah.
But it's like there's a place that would be nice to be where the consequences aren't there, but you also get to challenge yourself. I don't know if the consequences is what makes it different or.
I would say like, at least for myself, like, and again, this is long time horizon, because in the beginning, it's like the risk reward thing. It's really good. It's like mm-hmm. when some of the newness wears off and you do have the obligations of like the business, you have employees, like we both have families, like we have companies that we work with, like there's obligation. Mm-hmm. It's, you will hit points where it's not just fun hobby level, like go out to the shop, make a cool thing, mm-hmm. which is incidentally is like exactly what I did yesterday, because I'm just feeling like super burnt and super drained. And it is the, like when I look around, I'm like, there's so many projects that I'm working on. It's completely overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like I saw this coming, like I did two shows back to back. It's summer. We just got back from a vacation. There's a lot going on. And I did like the Kihoku development. So it's like crazy hours bookended by shows, which I'm an introvert. So like I get, you know, kind of drained socially. So I saw it coming, but like, that's part of the thing. So I think like over the years, like you develop these mechanisms to, it's like, it's weird, man. Like I wish that I could create a program that could like track this for me, where it's like, I put in my risk factors, my schedule, and it spits out like, all right, here's the deal. In 6 months, you're going to be emotionally and like physically drained. Here's like the rebuild process. Here's the pieces mm-hmm. to put back into place. Like follow this routine. And then that'll take 1 month. And then you're like back on track. Mm-hmm. Cause I think it would actually work. But like when, like right now I'm kind of like, so I'm in this burnout and I'm looking for the pieces to put back in place that like are restorative. And it can be tricky because your brain's not like, it's not running on like a positive bias.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just like, nope, you don't want to do that. You don't have time for that. You know, like what are yeah. that? That's what I'm struggling with right now is anything that is like multi-step. This is going to sound ridiculous, but like I'm having a hard time kind of like engaging with. So it's like, go to like, Maddie was like, why don't you go out to the coast? I'm like, I gotta pack the camper. I gotta like figure out like where I'm gonna camp. I gotta like, and right there, my brain's like, yeah. But I can go down to the river. Mm-hmm. It's like one step. basically. Get in the truck, go to the river. It's like lizard, full on like lizard brain level.
Yeah.
And that, I think having like these mechanisms and stuff along like the spectrum is the key, right? So like for you, you have the drone thing coming in. Like what would like the lizard level be if you need, you're going work to home, and you start to feel some like, you know, resistance. Mm-hmm. What's the least invasive version of like a break or restoration you can take?
My like controller hasn't arrived yet, but my hope is that like simulated flying like is enough. Like that's what I'm hoping to set up, is like literally open the laptop. Okay. Pure flow state. Like I'm just going to try to fly.
Right.
I'm hoping like, because that is so accessible that it'd be so helpful. But other than that, right now, what my heart like draws to is just driving.
Right.
And that, but like, I don't even know where, like, I mean, I've had times where it's like I leave work and I just sort of drive like a lap,
right?
You know, like around town. And I'm just like, I don't know. I'll just,
dude, I right mean, that's, turn, that's classic, yeah. Right? Like we've been self-employed a long time. Like you and I don't have long commutes,
mm-hmm.
but I've heard enough people talk about like the long commute is like not a negative. Like, no. Like I go and I get into traffic and I listen to podcasts for an hour before I get home.
Yeah.
Right. That is like that same like break.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, it's really, some of this stuff is tricky. And like, I like referencing like the self-employment thing, like a lot of my friends are self-employed and like at this point, either they have kids that are, you know, fully grown, or they have kids that like are our kids' age. But I don't know that many people with like traditional jobs that are like in our kids' age range. And I wonder, like, is this just like a fully universal thing, or is it different one way or another? Not that it matters. I'm just kind of curious, like if the experience is the same. I would guess probably.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is, you know, life has a way of getting more complicated. My dad used to say that all the time, like life gets more complicated, and I get it now. Like it's, you know, you have to be more decisive about in protecting yourself in a weird way. You know what I mean? And like designing things where the things that you think are going to help you like personally.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you want to get married, you want to have kids. Great stuff. Really, really important to me. A big part of who I am and, you know, what's built me. And then, so you do that for, you know, 5, 6, 7 years and you're like, okay, this is like building me.
Right.
But then there's the part of you that you kind of left behind, which we all kind of have had that sensation. If you've had kids, like you do have to, you know, set something behind. And then it's like realizing that, yeah, there's some of that you have to bring back. You know what I mean? Like you have to be yourself here and there. You know what I mean?
I think it's incredibly important. I mean, that idea, like someone had told me that early on about like marriage with kids was like, listen, like you guys need to prioritize your relationship, because mm-hmm. if the relationship is good, like your kids are going to be happier.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really easy to say, and it's like really, really hard to do. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of always in the back of my mind. Yeah, man, I don't know. This is like, it's interesting timelines, because like right now it feels like very like middle passage, like age wise, where things are like probably as easy in certain ways as they're ever going to be. Like, we're not like, we don't have like a lot of health problems, knock on wood. Like our kids are like psyched to be around us and like pretty easy, mm-hmm. you know? And like, and at the same time, we're in this point where like, we're kind of charging on our businesses and like trying, like still figuring out ourselves. And that can be tricky to like manage. I know, like, full stop, I'm not willing to sacrifice like my family for mm-hmm. success. Mm-hmm. Like, so that's delightful, because I would say that like there are many people who have done just that. Right. But at the same time, it comes with like internal conflict.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, for me, it's like putting family first in a sustainable way, because you have to work hard enough in business to be able to put your family first. If you don't make money and you're the primary income, family's going to suffer. So like putting family first involves work, but I think the missing element for me and maybe some other people is putting yourself and your mental state first sometimes results in benefiting your family. You know what I mean?
100%. And
So
there's
it's
two parts to this, which again, this is like both things are true. So you're talking about like, being successful in business and like as support for your family. And you look and you're like, there's multiple ways to achieve that. The way that I think is most sustainable is the one that pretty much takes the, kind of the most time up front, which is like building an efficient business, right? Building passive income, building like multiple revenue streams. Like that doesn't really just accidentally happen. And it doesn't happen by like just going into the shop and making stuff. Okay. The going into the shop and making stuff thing can do it. But as needs grow, the only way to increase you what your resources are is to work more. So it's kind of like you're front loading it on one, or you're maintaining it for much longer on the other. And both of them, like both of them are difficult, right?
Yeah,
So, Trip. So,
it's an endless.
can I give like a an unrelated slash kind of related story? Okay. We got an email through the website last week. basically, a knife maker's family was having an estate sale. Okay. In Bend. Dude,
Interesting.
some people listening will know, and you might know the name, but do you know the name TM Dowell?
Doesn't ring a bell.
Okay. Long time, like award-winning knife maker, co-founder of the Knife Makers Guild, like one of the original, I think it was like 11 members, like just like absolute, 60s, 70s, 80s kind of like peak maker. Did I think he's like one of the first makers to do like the milled integral. Like hunting knives, like you'd recognize a few things. One, you would see his TM logo and you would instantly recognize it if you've ever looked at a knife, like annual. And then if you saw the integral knife, same thing, you would like recognize it. So really just a really interesting story. So one, I had no idea that he was from Bend. Not only from Bend, has like been in Bend since like the early 60s. Okay. Passed away in 2012. His family is just now selling his shop. The reason that I say it was is like related slash unrelated is you kind of see like I saw when I went, I was like, this is like life of knife. He worked with his wife. She basically like maintain like even after he passed, like maintained their website. You guys should go definitely look at, I think it might be tmdowell.com or tmdowellknives.com. Just worth looking at because like it's old school, but it's also like archival. It was super interesting, man. So I go in, it's his son. In another like weird twist of fate, do you know what a golf board is? So like for a while I was seeing these like ads with like Laird Hamilton on like golf courses with like instead of a golf court cart, you have like an electric surfboard caddy. And he, it was like a sick idea. Turns out like Tim Dell's son was like a partner in that company. So like I walk into this knife shop and there's all these golf boards. And I'm like, it's just like weird crossover stuff. But really interesting, like talking to the son. He was like explaining, like they were basically doing production, but this is like old school guild production. This, so when we were talking about like the version where you work and the work occupies all of the time, this is that, right? Everything manual, every part made by hand, every part made in-house, and most of it done like, we want to make this integral. Here's how we can do it with our tooling. Just a really interesting, like, little like snapshot of history.
No, that's a. I see what you're getting at because it's like historical from a knife standpoint, but like a weird, like the ghost of Christmas future, you know what I mean? Kind of feeling
Dude,
for you.
it was, right? And the son is not a knife maker, but he worked in the shop for 10 years. And so like going through stuff, he was like explaining, like, do you know what a funny folder is? If you would recognize it, it's a pocket knife that has like, it swings out and has like an integral blade cover. You'll love it if you're not familiar. So basically, like, the blade like swings out sideways, and then like another piece swings around back over this frame and locks it
I think I know what
together.
you're talking about,
Okay.
yeah.
So Tam Dao built those. So like, as we were going through the shop, we found all of the fixtures to build that knife.
Wow.
And now it's like, you look and you're like, it's an inefficient way to do it now, but it was probably pretty dang efficient for them then. Just like, you're right, ghost of like Christmas future. So like that is like one version where you're like, no, and not to say like anything about like how it ended. It was just really interesting to see like a thought process and a working method that was it was a literal lifetime, right? I mean, I think the son mentioned, so he said that his mom tracked every single knife that they ever sold. So like, if you bought a TM Dao hunting knife in 1978, you could call and they'd be like, oh, you bought a 3.5-inch hunter with like, you know, linen micarta scales and brass
In
pins
a time before spreadsheets, she was
in
able
a
to do that.
time before spreadsheets. At some point, the son had converted it all to digital. Like, and I just thought it's like some, it's like essentially like some of what you're doing is like similar to that, where like you're tracking the data. I just thought it was really, really
That's
cool.
really cool.
I know. 35. So I think he said 3,500 knives.
Wow.
Right?
That's amazing.
Which simultaneously sounds like a lot and not a lot.
It's thing is complexity and handwork changes the recipe in terms of like
Change it totally
quantity.
changes the recipe, right?
Well,
And proving that like you can raise a family and have a life and like do all of these things with just your hands. So like it's fully doable.
And one thing I want to say about that is like it reminds me of how fortunate you and I and others are to be in an industry that has the history that the knife industry does, because people have lived and died in the trade that we're in. There's a lot of things you can do that are new enough that it's like everyone is kind of figuring it out for themselves. You know what I mean? Like you see that in tech where it's like this has never been done before. Like this is not
No kidding.
this is fresh. Like no one has like raised kids, sent them off to college and worked through retirement and then, you know, did whatever, doing what you're doing. There's no map. Whereas for us, you look and it's, yeah, the world has changed because we involve tech, you know, CNC and all that. It's changed, but it also hasn't, because you look, it's like the types of people buying the product, the types of product they want to make, the reason for making that product, like is stood the test of time for 10,000 years or whatever it is. You know what I mean? So
Well, and
it's
I
like,
like I think a lot about like modern, like our industry modern. It's kind of like pretty easy to make the case that it's like Bob Loveless was like kind of the driver, right? Because you had custom knives in the US before. but he was kind of one of the first to do like what's all, it's like all not a production knife, but like a custom knife at scale. Right. And just like, I mean, you still see it. There's entire sections of the knife industry or knife makers that all they make are like loveless pattern reproductions. Right. Which is a testament to like his width and breadth. Like,
Well, and to expand on that too, it's like you can go to a museum like about the Middle Ages. I mean, I haven't been to one,
right.
but you could, and you could look at like a sword that's been dug up and be like, oh man, the way they did that plunge.
Yeah,
You know what I
it's like
mean?
recognizable.
Yeah, it's like you could literally look at something that's 2,000 years old and be like, and visualize doing it, you know, with your own hands and be like, okay, yeah, no, that helps. And it's like an inspiration from an inspiration standpoint, it's direct. It's not like going to an art museum, but you're in tech or something, and it's like you're inspired because you're seeing art, but it's not actually the exact same art. You know what I mean? But you can literally see as someone that bevel ground something. And that's where you look at Loveless. It's like you look at a plunge on a Loveless knife 50 years ago or whatever. And it's like you can look at that and be like, okay, so he did do a fourth axis roll to do that, right? And it's like you like going through that shop that you just described, that's what kept going through my head, is that like, man, I want to see those fixtures. And I'm thinking to myself, it's crazy that seeing 40-year-old fixtures still matters. Like that's still that this industry is in a way so stable that like
It's
technology,
still relevant. Like,
and that's super strange to me, you know what I mean?
that's like Bob T's shop, where you realize like he's an efficient maker, right? But he's still a manual maker for the most part, right? Like laser cut parts, stuff like that. Like there's efficiencies there, but his repeatable processes in the shop, they're manual, but they're made as efficiently as they can be by his thought process around fixturing. I would argue that like looking at his fixtures might yield like the most valuable learning out of like, I mean, like, I don't want to say like anybody, but any maker that I have seen, I have gained more from seeing Bob's fixtures and just being like, oh, like that's how he's thinking about that. That translates to CNC
It
too.
does.
Like it's a way of thinking, right? Yeah, dude, you would have loved it. Like, one, it was such a nice, it was like really nice to like be brought in and get to see the space. We were leaving, like the shop's out back. It started as a two-car garage, has six additions. Like over the years that he'd build, and then, oh, I need a leather room. Time for to build on. I need a buffing room, right? Like these little additions. Most of the tools in the shop he built, and like they are so massively overbuilt that like I'll send you pictures of like the grinders. I mean, we're talking like a double-ended grinder with like a 5 horsepower motor and like a 3-inch drive shaft.
Oh my gosh.
Like insane. Like this grinder must have weighed 1,500 pounds, but he was just coming up with it himself. Like you couldn't, now you can go buy like probably one of 15 or 20 2x72 grinders. Dude, these things, he had like crazy mechanisms. Like he has this thing that is like if you imagine in front of the grinding wheel, a round bar. Okay. And then on that bar, essentially like a cheater bar on a tube. So that slides over. And then that has a push stick. And so he's grinding so many knives. Basically, he would like lever, like put the knife on the wheel and then like lever this huge thing up. And that would provide the pressure. And he would just pull straight across. Whoa. So for roughing in
Whoa.
blades, it's the difference of like holding it, you know, and like with hand pressure versus like holding it and putting like, you know, 900 pounds of force on it or something.
Holy cow.
Super, super
Dude,
cool.
that's crazy.
Yeah, I know.
So did you buy anything?
Yeah, a couple things. So the most interesting thing to me is actually the books. As we were leaving, I happened to see a little stack of books, I was like, oh, I was like, are you guys gonna get rid of books? He's like, dude, we have hundreds. And I walked around the corner and they had hundreds. But it was kind of all mixed in. And I was like, if you'll call me when you guys like sort this, like I'm super interested in the books. The thing that I did buy was a giant block of what turned out to be vintage Westinghouse ivory paper micarta.
When you said giant block, my head was like Westinghouse. I was
One
like,
inch thick.
no way.
Yeah, 1 inch thick by, I don't know. It's been cut into, but like I probably have a chunk that's like 8 by 8 or 11 by 8 or something.
Nice.
It's a pretty piece. It's got heat treat data written on top in pencil. It's
Oh
like
my
so,
gosh.
it's like the lineage of it is so rad.
Yeah.
Yeah, so pretty psyched. I brought some checkering tools, and then I have this idea. I might talk to him about what's really interesting is that because he worked in the shop and knows the process, I had this idea, like Tom Crine is a historian in the industry, kind of like I am, and more knowledgeable than me, but like has a lot of the same like data, like inputs, right? I was thinking it would be super, super cool to have Jeff, the son, essentially walk me and Tom through the fixturing for the funny folder
Yeah.
and build some, because it would keep that process alive.
Yeah.
This is a prime example of like really sticky. Like it sounds super fun, but I don't know that it's like best use of time, strictly speaking. But I'm like playing with the idea.
No,
So
that's interesting.
that could be pretty neat. Like I would love to see, it's all these wire bending
Dude,
fixtures and stuff.
just
Like,
go in there with a camera, shoot, even if it's an iPhone, and just record him talking, ask him if he'll do that, and be like, could you just explain the process and I'll just film it and then just put it in a Dropbox folder or whatever. But I mean,
yeah.
even just like you said, use of time, all that makes sense. But like just as an
But the
archival,
just as
because
archival.
like you said, that the fixtures only are a fraction of the whole story. You know what I
And
mean?
they're
Like,
only valuable if you know what they are,
yeah.
right? So what I basically told him, I was like, as you like unearth things, or as there's things of like historical significance, like the machines are probably going to be interesting to somebody, right? To me, like he was telling me, he's like, the other thing that my mom has is all these letters when they were forming the Knife Makers Guild, like letters
Oh,
between
wow.
my dad and Bob Loveless, some of that stuff. So like here's another thing that you can credit TM Dow with. He kind of was like the forefather, is that the right, of like the modern knife show.
Wow.
So they talk about like at a point, I think the guild was doing like their show in conjunction with a gun show. And there was like all this discussion around if a knife only show could stand on its own. And there was a lot of people that thought that it couldn't.
Wow.
He pushed for it. I think he developed a little show or like took it off site or something. And it kind of, I think, like might be the first knife only knife show.
No way.
Like this stuff is, I mean, like history wise, this stuff is just like really cool.
Yeah, that's rich.
I geeked out. We were walking out the back door. He's like, hey, you want to see something cool? I was like, yeah. He's like, okay, be quiet. And we walk into the backyard and there are six bucks sleeping, just like hanging out in his yard. This is in the middle of Bend, like down by the river. Okay. Dude, I was like, he's like, they've been coming for 20 years. He's like,
No
every
way.
year a group of bucks shows up and just sleeps in our yard. And every morning, like we come out and they're like hanging out.
That's
It
cool.
was why he's like, yeah, I can walk up the stairs right next to him and like they don't freak out. like super strange. They all had like fuzzy antlers right now. Like it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's sweet, dude.
Little chunk of history. I'll send you some shot pics because you'll get a
Yes,
kick out of
yeah, very much.
it.
I would love that. Send me.
All right. So that was a huge, that was like a huge diatribe story,
I
but
don't know. I don't think it was. I think it was a natural flow because, like I said, it's we, you and I, and a lot of people like us, we get stuck in our head thinking that what we're doing is new.
right.
And like, point being is like, this was an interesting direction to go because it's like, it's a reminder that like, no, people have done this. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
You're not the first person. There are people that you can ask. There are resources. There's people who are experiencing the same thing. You're not working in a vacuum, dude. And like, talk about things like they've been done before. Like it's the same that with kids, like that advice right there is like some of the best. It's like, you're not the first person to have kids. Like there's probably a lot of people that you can ask for advice. Not all of it's going to be good,
That's right.
but it's there.
Yeah. Man, that was interesting.
It was so out of the blue just like to receive that email. And I obviously what they did was they looked online, they found a knife maker in Bend and they sent an email. Like they didn't, I had never met Ted, like knew of him. He's in like the earliest knife making books that I have. So like I've known of him for as long as I've been interested in knives, probably like from an academic standpoint.
Well, good on them for thinking about talking
Yeah.
to a knife maker. You know what I mean?
I think a big
Because,
part of that was because his son worked in the shop
yeah.
and like that was what he said. He's like, yeah, he's like, I know a lot of this stuff's like not worth like, you know, crazy money, but I'd like some of it to go to people that appreciate it.
Yeah.
Even just things like, dude, all the old knife patterns. It's like you look and you're like, there's a brass, like a hand cut and ground brass pattern for a camp hatchet.
That's
Dude,
sweet.
just I would rather see that end up with someone who understands like the lineage of it than just ending up in an estate sale.
Yeah, going to a thrift store
Like
or something.
going to a thrift store, like some of this stuff. So where I was at, I was like looking for small tooling, things that were like shop made, you know, little stuff like that. And there were what I think there's been enough of a timeline between when he stopped making to now that's maybe not,
Scavenged a little bit.
yeah, a little bit, but you know, or and the son was working in the shop too on other projects. So it's kind of like a little bit of a mix of stuff, but okay. That's a flat spot. What else are we talking about today? Or do we go?
I'm in enough thought right now that maybe it's a good time to end it. I mean, not in a bad way.
Yeah,
It's been
I'm
like
game. I'm game for that.
I've got like a thread I'm pulling on. I don't know.
Oh yeah.
But I don't mean like I don't know. It, just in terms of I do feel like this was a good conversation. This has been helpful. But
You want to like
I
chew
want
on
it
it a
to
little bit.
internalize. Yeah, exactly.
I think okay, to sum up, I think there's a lot of value in being selfish to be generous. Okay? And this is over the long time horizon. Like if you don't take care of yourself, you can't take care of other people. If you don't like feed your creativity, your soul, you pay the price one. Like you like the idea that like if you don't take a break, something will break, is like pretty valid. And we're in like a very like hustle society, like push, push, push. And while I think there's a lot of value in that, I think that the flip side is it's almost like as hard as you push, you probably need to be like figuring out like a rest pattern. I mean, to like, you know, sum it up, I guess like work hard, play hard would be
Yeah,
like the
exactly.
thing.
It's a perfect
So
I
not the
believe
first
that
person to
more.
figure that out.
Well, and yeah, and it's like the brain has a duty cycle.
It's got a duty cycle.
That's what it is. You know what I mean? It's
What
like,
is it though? What is the brain's duty cycle? Right? That seems like a perfect one for us to like work on.
that's the name of the episode. What's the brand's
Right,
duty
dude,
cycle?
right now I feel like a little 110 volt welder, like a 10%
Trying to weld
duty
quarter inch
cycle.
plate steel.
Yeah, dude, like trying to put together like a tractor bucket or something. Like, oh, okay, run for 3 minutes, stop. That's where I'm at. Okay, cool. Felt good to record. We're coming to the end of the summer, and hopefully things are kind of like back on track.
It's cooling down. I'm so happy. I can walk outside and not scald
Literally and
my face.
figuratively. Yeah, dude, gnarly. For those of you guys on Patreon, thank you for the support. I want to do a book club. How about that? I was thinking that'd be a fun one. I got a couple book recommendations. And yeah, cool.
Let's talk books next week.
Okay, sounds good, man. All right, guys, be well.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys.